Well, greetings. Welcome to the Dividing Line. The rain stopped about 20 minutes ago. Sorry. I'll work on trying to arrange these things a little better. But actually, it rained for hours today up here. I'm in Prescott Valley. I'm go ahead and mention that now since I'm not going to be here all that much longer. But Prescott Valley, Arizona, and sun came up hot this morning. I mean, I thought it was going to be a, and then all of a sudden in came the thunder gusters and good rain. And we needed down in Phoenix just as bad too. But it didn't last all the way through. I was hoping to have some, you know, drops of water going down the windows and stuff like that, but we missed it by about 20 minutes, but that's all right. It's still only in the 60s outside. So I will take that before I head back home to the heat. So here we are again. If you haven't been keeping track of the program over the past couple of weeks, we are in what we call the Mobile Command Center here, the fifth wheel trailer that we have obtained. And this is a test run that we're doing right now. And so far, so good. I know what challenges I'm going to be facing tomorrow when I get back on the road. You got to work through them because starting at the end of July, we're going to be doing a road trip. And by the way, that reminded me of something. If your church would like to be involved and what does it mean to be involved? Well, if you would like to let us know of the desire on the part of your church that if I happen to be coming through and I have the opportunity to get together with your fellowship, your elders, you know, it doesn't have to be the whole church. It could just be something with the elders or, you know, there's a lot of different things we could do for a couple hours in an evening as I am traveling normally to a further away destination, then please drop us an email at roadtrip@aomin.org. Roadtrip, one word, roadtrip@aomin.org. Just let us know. Give us contact information, address for your church, and we will put that into a basically a map that we're developing. And then as I plan these journeys, so for example, I'll be speaking, and I know what I'm going to be speaking on too, at G3. Looking forward to my topic. It's one I've addressed before, so I've got some certain level of confidence. And I promise you, I will not be reading someone else's sermon word for word. Or pretending that I'm somebody else when I present that at G3. Anyway, so I know when I need to be there. And so what I'm doing is I'm planning how far ahead do I need to leave? And how many miles do I want to cover each day? I don't want to be doing there, you know, I've already got one trip where I'm going to be going up through Denver. I'm going to be speaking Redemption Hills Church. I'm going to be speaking with Jason Lyle at his church on a Monday or Tuesday night there in Colorado Springs. Then heading up all the way to Moscow, Idaho, where I'll be doing a lot of speaking there over just a couple of days. It'll be busy time. And then back down through Nevada. So takes a little bit of work. It used to be in the olden days, there would be maps laid out all over the kitchen table. And you'd have magic markers the yellow markers out. And you'd be measuring stuff out and all the rest of that stuff. Well, technology has advanced a little bit. And obviously, Google Maps is amazing. Can do a lot with that. But there are other programs, too. And I've actually found one that's focused on Apple, and hence will display in what's called CarPlay in the vehicle, that allows me to route things out, and I'll know when I'm supposed to arrive at a certain place, and I can tell it what my maximum speed's going to be, because, you know, Google Maps just assumes you're going to the speed limit. And in one of these things, that's not wise to be always trying to do that. So it gives you a good idea of really how long it'll actually take you to get there, and how many hours. And so I'm sitting there going, okay, I need a place to stay here. I need a place to stay there. And then I can combine that with the people who sent information in. And that doesn't always mean that, okay, I'm within 50 miles, so it's always going to happen. But I'll be able to contact folks and say, hey, I'm going to be coming in at such and such a day. And this is a day when I will have time to be doing something in the evening. I can't always guarantee that. And obviously, there's always got to be had a flat tire, had to wait for assistance, mechanical breakdown, weather. You know, it's got to be one of those, you're not putting out a bunch of money and stuff to plan on this. It's more informal. But get together and do something, hopefully, that will be edifying for the church. So that's roadtrip@aomin.org. As you know, there's lots of subjects that we can address. We can do textual critical things. I can obviously, if I can remember to do so, and I will, got plenty of room in this thing to throw a digital projector in, and we can do things on, you know, if the Mormons are putting a big push on in your area, we can talk about Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses, Roman Catholicism, Islam. Maybe there's a mosque being built in your neighborhood. You want to know how to reach out to your Muslim neighbors, all sorts of stuff like that. If we talk about it on the program, then we can probably be dealing with it. So roadtrip@aomin.org, drop us an email, and that way we'll know. Now, obviously, as I'm thinking about trips in the future, most of my routes will be oriented toward red states. And that doesn't mean I'm not going to be going into blue states, though it would really take a lot to drag me into California or any of the left coast. I'll be honest about that. I would be hesitant. Those folks are weird. I know there are still Christians there, and we feel for you. But really, for the past year and a half, I can't tell you how many people have come up to me after services at Apologia and said, we're from California, we're from Washington, we're from Oregon, we're getting out of there. We have new members meetings, and we meet people. And for the past year and a half, I'd say at least a third to a half are people escaping those states. So who knows what the future is going to hold. You and I do not know whether next month there's going to be, here's COVID-21. None of our vaccines cover this. And now with the Biden regime, the pressure on Texas and Florida, let alone other places, will be immense to just go right back to complete and total lockdown. Everybody back in your mask, full body hazmat suits. That's what we'd be looking at. So then again, might not happen for a while, but I will just be honest. And I know those of you in New Zealand and Australia to understand. Well, in Australia, you're getting the idea. Yeah. But I trust my government as far as I can throw my government. And George Washington and Thomas Jefferson would agree with my attitude to that. They really would. That's why they designed the system of government they did, is they were well aware that you aggregate evil when you aggregate power governmentally. And so that's what we're facing. Anyways, so give us a holler, and we'll put it in there, and we'll see what happens. As I said, we've got a western swing, July into August. These are long trips because you're not, you know, if you're in a little bitty car doing the speed limit plus, you can get a lot of miles in a day. Something like this, between stops for gas and things like that, you just can't go all that far in a day. So when I go to G3, I'm working on that one right now to figure out, you know, there's two different routes I can take to get to Atlanta, and differing stops along the way. And obviously there are people that I've been in their churches before, and we've developed a close relationship. So I'm going to have to try to make it work out somehow to visit the troublemaker in Texas. He's on the way, you know, and same time, then in December, St. Charles, Missouri, been going there that first weekend in December. Starts getting cold at that point in time. But that, you know, they can have snow in December in St. Charles. So, yeah, there you go. That would be, that's when it starts getting really interesting. That's when you really want to be in the South more than the North, even though that one storm in Texas this last winter. Whew, glad I wasn't sitting at an RV park when the electricity went out there. Everything frozen solid. But anyway, so we want to get back out into the churches, want to meet folks, and this is how we're going to be doing it. And so far, so good. I haven't destroyed this thing, damaged this thing, or anything else. So, but I'm still learning a lot about it, too. So it's a learning curve. So with that, shortly after, well, hold that one a second. Two articles that I saw today. I did get out for a ride. That's the other thing that's wonderful about this, is if I turn the camera around, you would see my entire, well, first of all, you would see my road bike, my good road bike, which I rode this morning. I climbed Mingus Mountain. Rich knows that route real well. And really enjoyed that. It was great to be out there. At the same time, the road's falling apart. I'm noticing a lot of roads are falling apart. The road's falling apart, and I got back. I was going to do a second loop, go back up to the top a second time, and, man, just dodging those big full-size earth movers that they have running up and down that road on a rough road just wasn't a whole lot of fun. So if I turn the camera around, you'd also see that I have my entire indoor riding setup. And some of you don't understand how that works. I understand that. Just trust me. Over the past 6 years or so, technology has gotten to a point where you can get something like this set up that I'm looking at right now, and you can ride indoors just as enjoyably and just as much benefit and just as tough as anything you do outside. And I get to climb the Stelvio, I get to climb L'Alpe d'Huez, Mount Ventoux, places I'll never get to go and actually ride these things. But I can ride them virtually now, and it takes me just as much energy, just as much effort to do it in this room as if I was out in the real world. They tested it. They had a guy in L'Alpe d'Huez. They had him climb L'Alpe d'Huez. They had him do the same thing in a program called Zwift, which is the primary one that I use. I also use RGT. They're both really, really good. And it was within 1% of the effort that he had to put out to be able to do that. So especially as I'm aging, I'm just don't enjoy playing ping pong and tag with trucks and cars, especially tech and drivers, as much as I once did. Well, I've never done it, never enjoyed it. But anyway, that allows me to utilize this fun stuff and stay in shape. That's if I was to be off bike for 3 weeks at a time, this wouldn't work real well. But that's the one thing about this is, as long as I've got an hour, I can at least get an hour in. And today I rode outside, then put that bike up, got on the one inside, did another hour and a half there, and got a good trip in, studying all the way. I'll admit, what I was listening today, I'm actually reading Darwin's Doubt by Stephen Meyer. And that is a technical book. <It's>, if I did not have a science background, I would have turned this one off a long time ago, a long, long time ago. Anyhow, speaking of science, I wandered off the topic there. Let me get back to it. Two articles today that I saw that were very concerning to me. One was a doctor pointing out published papers from Moderna, papers that are out there, but let's be honest, how many people are digging through technical journals? But one doctor talking about what Moderna itself admitted as far back as 2017 in regards to its delivery system that is being used for these mRNA vaccines. Very, very troubling admissions as to the long-term impact. See, I have always, you know, you've watched this program. I have always said that the issue here is what the long-term impact and effect of the experimental technology is. And these are not things that can be seen in a short period of time. Now, all this stuff we're already seeing is very, very troubling. If 20-year-old men are in the hospital with heart issues, with inflammation of the linings of the heart because of these vaccines, and they are, the very men who have an almost 0% chance of death from COVID-19. And yet the words from the powers on high is it's worth the risk. Why is it worth the risk? They're not at risk. Well, but they might pass it on to somebody else. And there's the issue. That is true of any disease on the planet. The goal post has been moved so many times here with the willing assistance of the mainstream media that anyone who's still listening, who has a science background, and yes, I do have a science background. I was department fellow in anatomy and physiology in my undergraduate work. I finished all the work for a bachelor of science degree in biology. So I am cursed with a fair amount of scientific knowledge in the background of these things. And if we're still listening, we realize that millions and millions and millions of dollars, maybe billions of dollars, have been spent to fundamentally change the conversation in the United States. Most of my fellow citizens now believe that our goal should be, and driving down the roads here in Arizona, it's your chance to end COVID-19. You can't end COVID-19. We have never ended a respiratory virus. Well, we defeated measles or rubella. Those are not respiratory viruses. They're not respiratory viruses. It's a whole different world. Every respiratory virus that has ever been has either mutated into something else and is still out there, or isn't bothering with mutating, is still being highly effective as it is. That's why the flu shot that we used to offer each flu season was a best guess. It was never your chance to wipe out flu. This is our season. Let's do it, folks. No, it was never what it is, because anybody who knows the field knows you don't wipe out respiratory viruses. You find ways of dealing with them, of minimizing their effects, but you don't wipe them out. But now everybody has the idea, yep, that's our goal, which is impossible, which means since you now have an impossible goal, then people will do anything you tell them is going to advance an impossible goal. Wow, you've got them under your... Yep, that's how it works. And that's what they're doing. So you get this, another article that is discussing the data hidden within other reports of an 82% spontaneous abortion rate for first trimester pregnancies for women taking the COVID-19 second shot. 82%. Now, that seems absurdly high, but here's the problem. The people who are getting the billions of dollars for pushing this stuff, the people who are behind the Great Reset, the people like Bill Gates, who are using their vast wealth to fundamentally reshape Western society, destroy our freedoms and liberties, they all say the exact same thing. And this is not conspiracy stuff, folks. Go back and watch their videos. They've been saying this stuff for almost 20 years. Now we all go, Al Gore, what an idiot. Go back and listen to the people Al Gore pals around with. What's one of the main things they say all the way through? We cannot sustain the world's current population. And in fact, we can't sustain half of the world's current population. The numbers start coming in at about a third, 20%. How are you going to get rid of everybody? How about destroying their fertility? Does anyone really honestly know the long-term effect on male fertility, female fertility? Because if you dare even whisper that there is evidence that this stuff ends up in the reproductive organs of people, we don't know exactly what it ends up doing. But it ain't good for the heart, is it? If it ain't good for the heart, might it have deleterious effects elsewhere? How do we know? We have taken an experimental genetic noxious concoction and crammed it into the arms of everybody. And we're still doing it. In fact, I just had a guy on Twitter contact me and say, my job just told us, you take the jab or you quit or you're fired. That's it. That's all there is to it. And a lot of people are going to be facing exactly that. And it's purposeful. It has nothing to do with being afraid of a virus. It has nothing to do, well, you know, you're in great danger. No, these are healthy people that would blow through COVID in a matter of days, just like they've blown through respiratory viruses for a long, long time. It has nothing to do with saving lives. It has everything to do with destroying freedom and liberty and establishing a complete totalitarian state. Yep, Fauci, ouchie, or you lose your job. That's what Rich just said. So I have to now, I wonder, like when Rich sends me something like he just did, I wonder if I could do it like we were in the studio. So I just go, and that's sort of what you hear normally when Rich says something through the window. So maybe I should come up. I should find a sound effect that I can play right before I then repeat what Rich said in response to it. Yeah. Okay. But they can actually understand you now, and then they'd really start finding out what I have to deal with, the cross that I've had to bear for decades now. Okay, good. Because that's coming out here, and there's the microphone. So that's probably why it's working. Anyway, now you want the really scary thing about all this? I mean, okay, having global elites working together through various nations to try to get rid of half the world's population is pretty scary. And it's really scary. It's also scary. I never mentioned this before, but Fauci was being interviewed about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, and he made the statement. He said, I just find it incredible that anyone would think that the Chinese would do something like this and risk killing their own people. And I just wanted to go, they're communists, sir. And if they thought that killing a third of their people would give them world dominance, they do it without even losing sleep. Wake up, people. Read your history. 120 million in the last century. Communism is satanically evil. And the evidence is found in the boneyards from Cambodia on to the West. And if you don't know that, then you are so naive that you shouldn't be allowed to operate heavy machinery. Okay? That's just all there is to it. So, but then I see an official Canadian government video today. And they're talking about restrictions, lockdowns, because you know, on July 1st, a bunch of this stuff's supposed to expire. But the government loves controlling people. And you need to understand, the government wants as many people on the public dole as possible. That's why they shut down businesses here. If your business was destroyed, it was purposeful. Because if you make your own living by your own work, then you're not as controllable as someone who's getting their dole from the government. The people on the dole from the government vote for more government. That's just how it works. And we may be well past the tipping point on this already. But that's the issue. And so you may say, but they'll destroy the economy. That's exactly what they want to do. It's exactly what they want to do. That's purposeful on their part. Yes, they will. And don't have any problem doing so. These people are printing money and spending it, and they know they're never gonna have to pay it back. Because there's a new order coming and all that stuff's just gonna go bye-bye, but they've gotten the power from it. So there's Canadian government video. Well, this is what they're talking about. And then the guy says it. Remember on the last program, we were talking about the IRS guy? Yeah. Bureaucrats are new overlords. Then the guy says, it's important that we monitor gatherings of people for public health and also gatherings of people where false information might be spread. The government wants to control what information is being spread. So you've got it. Big Brother will tell you what you can and cannot believe. And if you listen to anything else, Well, Big Brother won't let you talk to anybody but yourself about that. It is Orwellian to its core, but that's what you've got on the left coast. That's what you've got in New York. That's what you've got in Canada. That's what you've got in Australia. That's what you've got in New Zealand, all across Europe. We can't let you all get together if you're going to be saying bad stuff about us. These are totalitarians. We're trying to warn you. We're trying to tell you. If you want to have the freedom to determine what you're going to eat, where you're going to live, what you're going to do for a job, and what you're going to think, then you need to wake up and realize that there are a bunch of people that are doing everything they can to take those freedoms away from you and to run your life. Just remember that video clip. We played it before. I should track it down again so we can play it over and over again. By what, 2035, you'll own nothing and be happy. And it's the be happy part that is the command. Because you won't be happy, but you better act like it. That's what we're facing. That's what's going on. So anyway, there you go. So let's shift subject here. I've already gone half an hour, apologize. Hey, Rich, remind me, I'm seeing more than one of these. There is some type of a device that most of my neighbors have that you put between the tires that looks like one super duper heavy duty display. This thing ain't moving thing. Remind me, we need to. Oh, well, all I can tell you is most people around here think they are. I just happen to go, hey, I'm about the only one that I can see don't have that. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. Okay, shortly after the program ended yesterday. Well, right after the program ended yesterday. In fact, I was talking to Rich going, hey, did you see this? I don't know. I was looking in Twitter, and somebody obviously got hold of far too many of Ed Litton's sermons before the great Ed Litton sermon purge, and is cranking them out. These are all from Romans, from the Romans series. I didn't watch the rest of them. All I needed to do was just listen to Romans 8. I just needed to. I had already watched the one from Romans chapter 1, which I think initially caught people's attention because it was about whispering about sexual sin and all the rest of that kind of stuff. I think that is what put people on the trail of this. And someone a lot smarter than me and with a lot more time than me and interest in me was looking at that going, wait a minute, that's the same phrase that Greer used. And well, that's the same. And then you start putting the two of them together. And it's like, that's the same sermon. Well, the Romans 8 sermon, different topic, right? Yeah. The plagiarism here is, this is not, it's not a question. This isn't about doing, I heard somebody use the phrase, well, they're just doing theology in community. There are so many times where there isn't even an attempt to change the words. What has plainly been done is somebody has either, you know, Greer does this weird thing where he doesn't have a pulpit. It looks so uncomfortable. But he's got this manuscript sort of inserted into his Bible. You can see it, but he's always got this, and you can tell he's reading stuff. So he's got a manuscript in there, multiple page manuscript actually stuffed into the Bible. I could never do that. Anyway, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it just seems really uncomfortable to constantly got this thing in your hand, and that's, but hey, to each his own. So someone has either received from Greer, because I imagine you, I doubt he's a handwriting manuscript guy. It's going to be on a computer. Did he send him the notes? Or, failing that, somebody sat down and transcribed this thing. Or, YouTube will the YouTube transcription thing ain't half bad. It's amazing. It's scary to admit. Because you can have, YouTube is transcribing me live right now. And that means the YouTube sensors and algorithms can be looking for everything I just said. This may never see the light of day, as in being repeated. And most of our audience watches this at a different time. I mean, I almost never watch anything live. I just can't fit it into my schedule. I'm throwing it on my phone and listening as I'm riding or doing what I'm doing. Or now these days, traveling. So they did. I don't know how they did it, but the fact is, in this Romans 8 sermon, the points are broken down the same way. The subpoints are the same. Most of the time, there's not even an attempt to change words. It is blatant plagiarism. But what just drives me out of my mind is the utilization of the same illustrations as if Ed Litton went through what J.D. Greer said he went through. That every illustration, when I have, let's use the illustration. Let me give you an example. Just had my 39th wedding anniversary last week. So what's sort of fun right now? Like right now, two of my granddaughters are with Nani at home. So I miss seeing them. I'm not going to get to see them until I get back. But, you know, we FaceTimed. And so we're doing our grandparents thing. And so one of the things I'm enjoying right now is starting back in March, we started having 40-year anniversaries of our first date. Earlier this month, June 5th or 6th, one of the two, 40 years since I gave her my class ring and told her I loved her for the first time. Coming up in December, 40 years since the proposal. And on a bike ride recently, I went by and found out that the tree that we stood under in the park is still there after 40 years. And it looks like it's been there for 40 years. But olive trees last a long time. It's a little gnarled, just like I am. Not her. I didn't say that. Like I said, I signed the agreement, as all guys do. We don't remember doing it, but we do it. We do the aging for the couple. Ladies age far better than men do. That's just the reality. Anybody who's seen my wife knows I signed that in triplicate. But it's 40 years old, and it's gnarled, but it's still there. And I think it's really cool. So we're going through all this stuff, and I'm telling the grandkids these stories. And as I've traveled, I've told these stories to folks. I've told the story about how I got my woman. And I even mentioned on Twitter that I, on our first date, for the whole time we were at Peter Piper Pizza. Yeah, we were 18. At 18, you go to Peter Piper Pizza. Our first date, I narrated for her in chronological order and probably nauseating detail the entirety of the Battle of Midway from World War II. How effective was that? She never dated anyone else again. We married 15 months later. Know your history, men. Know your history. All right? Now, I've told that story many times. My wife just rolls her eyes and tries to hide as I tell these stories. But no one else could ever tell that story as if it was about them. And let me tell you something. If somebody did, I'd punch him in the nose. I don't think there is anyone in history that took a girl on a date at age 18 and told her the entirety of the Battle of Midway, and they ended up getting married 15 months later, except me and my wife. I think that may be unique in the history of the world. So if that ends up in somebody's sermon in first person, I remember when I took my girlfriend out to Peter Piper Pete, you know, we were only 18, and you never did any of that because you had stolen my sermon where I happened to mention my experience. How can you even do that? How can you get up in the morning and look at yourself in the mirror? I mean, you have got to have convinced yourself that this is just all a big game. And so here's J.D. Greer telling us in this Romans 8 sermon, he's talking about something that I experienced. And if you're, I think, do they still do driver's ed? I heard that because of insurance stuff, things like that, that that was a rarity anymore. But I took, what, because of what? Oh, COVID? Well, I know COVID. Yeah, well, COVID is just simply another way of saying socialism. You know, why did it take a month to get my license plate for my truck rather than the week that it used to? Well, aluminum shortage. Why? COVID? No, socialism. Anyway, he was telling a story about how when he was younger, and we're in the same age range, he took driver's ed, and they had these cars where your instructor, who's sitting in the passenger seat, has a brake. He has a brake pedal. Those are the only cars I had ever seen. I think it was a Chevy Citation, if I recall correctly. But maybe not. But anyways, it was a boring blue car. And he had a brake pedal, so he could slam on the brakes if need be. And he never did that for me. But he said, Greer said in his sermon, that this guy had done that just to make sure that he knew who was in charge. And then he made application, some spiritual application. All right. I thought it was a pretty lame illustration when Greer used it. But here comes Litton, and he uses the exact same illustration, but now it's him. And lo and behold, his driver's ed teacher did the exact same thing so he could make the exact same spiritual illustration. Right. How do you do that? I mean, just calling that dishonest and so inauthentic. How do you then feign some kind of passionate application? I mean, in a sermon, when I say, folks, now listen to me, this is important. What I'm about to say is coming from my heart, from my own study of the text. Not because some other guy at the same point in his sermon got all passionate and said, now, folks, listen to what I'm about to tell you. I cannot conceive of this. I don't know Ed Litton. I had never heard of this church or of him until his name was listed as the progressive candidate for the SBC presidency. I never, and right about now, he's probably wishing that that had stayed the same for everybody. But this is what happened, and this is what he's done. And I don't, given how many sermons just disappeared, and the fact that he told the Washington Post one reason for why those sermons disappeared, and the church said something different as to why those sermons disappeared, you have now a full loan scandal here. No question about it. None. Now, of course, what the other side is doing, if you all are just blowing this up, it's not that big of a deal, and all you guys want to do is you want to have Ed Litton resign so that the first vice president becomes president, and he was a Mike Stone supporter. So you're trying to undo the election. That sounds familiar. That's what's going on now. Wow. I'm sorry? That's true. Wasn't us to purge the website, but because how much more would be found? How much more needs to be found? Does anything more need to be found? I don't think any more needs to be found. Anyway. All right. So if you haven't seen those videos, they're pretty easy to find. And it's astonishing. But it does say a lot that there are many people going, well, you know, I just don't see it. This is really a problem. And the political, it's the standard Southern Baptist circle, the wagons response. And it's, can't keep doing it. It's amazing. Anyway, all right. Last few minutes of the program. Let's get back to, we're a couple weeks ago, we were talking about the Dale Tuggy thing, and we were talking a little bit about his appearance on Jake, the Muslim Metaphysician's, Jake interviewed him, and he went off on the attack on me, and, you know, I obviously live rent-free in his head. And once I get back and have time to put together the clips where I'd want to, I want to walk through some of these things. But one of the things I want to do is try to, outside of that, focus on positively communicating to believers why we believe the things we believe and the intimate connection that exists between the content of divine revelation, God has spoken, and then the communication of what is found there, and especially in the amazing reality of the incarnation, and how that has been communicated down through the centuries. Very often, this aspect of things can end up looking rather dry and boring and irrelevant, and sort of hard to be passionate about it. I get it. I think part of that is just the way it's presented. I've often criticized people who would teach church history or theology without passion. I never understood it. And I have taught those subjects with passion. My students can tell you that I have in a number of different contexts. But anyway, there's either a thunderstorm coming or someone is losing their hearing in their car. I can guarantee that. I've never understood those people who go driving down the road. And you can tell, even knew this so many years, that the car itself rattles because it has just been shaken apart by the subwoofers in there. I really feel for them. They will be the people advertising for the hearing aids in not too distant future. Anyway, so we've been looking at, I cited a counter example to one of the things that Tuggy said from Gregory the Wonder Worker. Thaumaturgus is one way he's identified, but Gregory of Neo Caesarea is more of a geographical way of identifying him. Because wonder worker, thaumaturgus, but most people are identified by where they were bishop. You know, you've got Gregory of Nyssa, so he's identified as where he was bishop at, and the different Clements, Rome, Alexandria. So the geographical designator is a little more consistent. And so around 265, Gregory writes this Confession of Faith. We were looking at it last time, and what I did is I just pointed out that it follows beautifully, I think, the pattern that Paul used in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 6, where he takes the Shema Yisrael, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad, and he expands it out. He takes the Septuagint version, and he expands it out in light of what has taken place in the incarnation. Because that's really what you have to recognize the apostles are up to, is they plainly teach that the Christian faith is not some new religion. Jesus, his life, ministry, death, burial, and resurrection, prophesied, Moses, all the prophets, all pointed to him. This is fulfillment, not replacement. And that's why Paul can say, we are the true circumcision, worship God in Christ Jesus, and so on and so forth. There's continuity, but there's also tremendous expansion, because now the message goes out to Jew and Gentile. And as you read the history of the church in Acts, you see this being played out. You see it happening. I mentioned this in the sermon Sunday night at Apologia. Like ripples in a pond. Now, I am sure that someone else has used the illustration of ripples in a pond in a sermon before. In fact, that's probably the most used illustration ever. But I wasn't borrowing it from anybody, hadn't heard anybody. I'm just looking at Acts and seeing you've got Jerusalem, and then you've got Samaria, and then Cornelius, and out to the, and then Paul becomes the primary person that's being seen from that point onward, and going out to the world. This is how you see the expansion. Once you understand that, then you see what's going on in the church and in the history of the church. It has well been said, before we get back to Gregory, we may not get back to Gregory today, but it has well been said that even though historically you have the Trinitarian controversies coming before the in-depth definitions of Christological issues. In other words, you have the affirmation of monotheism and three divine persons, the Trinitarian foundation. And then once you have that, now you have to answer questions relating to how does the divine, the human in Christ, how are they related to one another? And so you have what eventually is the Chalcedonian definition, 451. So 126 years after Nicaea, where you have the boundaries drawn. So no, it's not a mixture. It's not Eutychianism, and it's not replacement. It's not Apollinarianism, and it's not separation. It's not Nestorianism. Here's what you really have, not so much as a positive definition, but as a negative, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, provided by biblical realities, provided by revelational categories. So you move from the foundational Trinitarian issues to the Christological conclusions. But historically, that as far as the actual driving force, it's not so much that as it is the church is always dealing with who Jesus is. So let me give an example. I just want to give an example. I know I've talked about it before, but it's so beautiful. One of my absolutely, this would be in my top three patristic citations, patristic quotes I'm not sure how many people would have a list of patristic citations. My dear friend Gilbert Penman would. He does top 10 lists, and I'm sure he has a, this one would be in there somewhere. When Ignatius, the bishop of Antioch, on his way to his martyrdom in Rome, wrote to the church at Ephesus, I cannot recommend too highly the reading of Ignatius. I just finished working through with my dear friends in Germany. I just finished working through Ignatius. We're now going to start picking up speed a little bit. In fact, we have a class Friday. That's going to be interesting. We spent, I don't know how many classes on it, but it's just so rich reading Ignatius. Read Ignatius's epistles. But let me just read you this one as an example of what I'm talking about. Wrote to the church at Ephesus and said this: there is only one physician. There is one physician. Now, I'm looking at a translation here. Didn't have time to bring the Greek up, but I started memorizing the Greek ones, so I know what's behind these. Both fleshly and spiritual, generate and ingenerate. This says born and unborn. I just don't like that translation. Generate and ingenerate. God in man. True life in death. Both from Mary and from God. First passible, that is subject to suffering, and then impassible, not subject to suffering. Jesus Christ our Lord. So look at the, there's one physician. So he's physician as in the one who can bring healing, not physical healing, spiritual healing. There's one physician. He is fleshly and spiritual. I mean, think about this for a moment. This is the same level of Christological formulation in 107 that is being protected and expanded upon in 451. So almost about 344 years later, 244 years later, 344 years, you have the same theology. You have the same teaching. So this here in the first generation after the apostles, you have incredibly in-depth Christology. This is not the only place where Ignatius shows us that he can assume that everybody else that he's writing to, all the churches he's writing to, he can assume they all share in common this in-depth Christology. In fact, I'll be honest with you. Today, I would have more concern talking to most evangelicals that they might not have this depth of understanding of the hypostatic union than Ignatius shows in the generation after the apostles. He has more confidence that the people he's writing to are well instructed in the nature of the hypostatic union. He doesn't use the term hypostatic union. That's going to be used later to describe what he's saying. But hear it again. There is one position of flesh and the spirit, generate and ingenerate, God in man, true life and death, from Mary and from God, first impassible and then passable, first passable and then impassable, Jesus Christ our Lord. If that's not a description of the hypostatic union, God and man, and yet not intermingling them, what else is it? That's how early this is. And you see that the common theological formulation in seminaries and universities is that this developed much, much, much later. There's, you know, it's this primitive to advanced. That's not what the actual source is. tell us. You can't dumb this down. It's there. And so when you see 160 years later, Gregory saying many of the exact same things, you shouldn't be shocked. You shouldn't be going, well, you know, he's just developed this and you know, he's the first one to think of this. No, let me just, we'll wrap up with this. Here's the description of Jesus. One Lord, monos ek manu, only from only. Theos ek theou, God from God. That's going to be Nicaea. That's going to be Nicaea 60 some odd years later, half a century later. Kodekter, kai ikon, tes theotetos. Now, we're going to go over an hour here. I'm sorry. Hold on. This is too much fun. Theotetos is the term that Paul uses in Colossians 2:9. Theot and thiot are related but different. That's why the King James translation of Romans 1 as Godhead and Colossians 2:9 as Godhead is misleading. Theotetos is that which makes God God. Thiot can be much more general, less specific. But look at that. Character, kai, iko. Character and image of the very essence of God is what Gregory says half a century before Nicaea. This translation says effective logos. It's logos energos. The energia, very important, especially in Eastern theology. Energetic, active. Wisdom embracing the structure of the universe, power that makes the whole creation, true son of a true father, invisible from an invisible one. Sounds like Ignatius, doesn't it? Incorruptible from an incorruptible one. Sounds like Ignatius again. Immortal from an immortal one, eternal from an eternal one. When I see the consistency from divine revelation through testimony of sound teachers, all the way through, there's where you find the beauty of truth. What do they do to you in liberal seminaries and things like that? They teach you none of that exists. And in old style Roman Catholicism, that's tradition and we define it. Those are all errors. So there's always a way to twist these things. But what I find beautiful is when you can go to the scriptures, you see these truths, and then you see faithful men. Were there people who were wrong about these things? Yes, there were. So what people want to say is, and that means nobody knows. No. If you have the right foundation, that foundation will allow you to see these beautiful things. I think they're beautiful. And if you've hung on this long, maybe you think they are too. So, anyway. All right. I have to spend more time with him in the future. I want to go through each one of those. I want to go through and talk about what those say. Because you've got, later on, people are always telling you, yeah, and they didn't really even care about the Holy Spirit, and blah, 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 blah. One Holy Spirit, substantial existence from God, manifested through the Son, perfect image of the perfect Son, living cause of living things, in 265. There you go. And I can go back to Ignatius. And he uses the Trinitarian example of salvation. And what's the engine? The Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit is the rope. The engine's the cross. So it's all there if a person just knows where to look. So there you go. All right. Here we are in the Mobile Command Center doing church history and Trinitarian theology and the hypostatic union, and that's exactly what we should be doing. We can talk about what's, we have to talk about what's going on around us. We can't hide in a, in the basement. Got to deal with that stuff too. But there's just something thrilling about remembering that Christ is still building his church. He's built his church through tremendous difficulties in the past. And if more are coming, he will still continue to do so. And he will build that church based upon the same truth. So spending time talking about that truth, good stuff, good stuff. All right, well, thanks for joining us on the program today. Not sure when we'll be back together again, but we threw a few programs in this week as it was. So we'll just sort of play it by ear. Get the Alpha and Omega Ministries app so you can keep track and follow what we're doing here, and it looks cool and all that neat fun stuff. Get the AO Ministries app so you can, I'm going to try to do better to be posting on the Theology Matters microblog and things like that too. And hopefully that'll pop up for you. So we'll see you next time. Thanks for watching. God bless.